Dr. Joel Sabangan comes from Ardmore, Oklahoma. How many of you have ever heard the definition of an expert? An expert is someone who travels more than 50 miles to give a talk and has slides. He's traveled more than 50 miles, he has slides today. But beyond that, he's board certified internal medicine, board certified pulmonary medicine, board certified sleep medicine. So I think with all of those, we have someone who is qualified to talk to us about sleep. So don't go to sleep.
No? Can you hear me? Okay. Well, I'm actually not board certified in internal medicine anymore, but the other two I still am. I let my certification lapse. Anyway, today I'm going to talk about sleep. And, you know, we're beginning to find out now, in the last 30 years, how a lot of the medical problems that we've known in the past, like high blood pressure, high cholesterol, stroke, heart disease, cancers, are all related to sleep. In other words, chronic sleep deficiency will predispose you to a lot of these chronic medical problems. And so that's what I'm going to talk about today. You know, sleep, I'm going to start off with just a basic understanding of what sleep, what you go through when you sleep. There are five stages of sleep, 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. The first four are called non-REM, and the last one, the fifth one, is called REM, or rapid eye movement. Rapid eye movement sleep. REM is when people dream. You can also dream in non-REM, but they're dreamlike states. They're not really dream. But what happens when you sleep, well, you know what's amazing, though, is when they put electrodes on your brain, they can identify what stage of sleep you're in. Like, this is when you're awake. You don't need to know all this, but this is what it looks like when you're awake. When they put all these electrodes and they do a tracing on your brain, that's what it looks like when you're awake. When you're getting groggy and getting ready to fall asleep, this is what it looks like. And then, this is what stage two looks like, okay? And then as you go into the deeper stages of sleep, this is stage three and stage four, you see these low frequency, high amplitude delta waves. You know, young kids have a preponderance, or they have a robust amount of delta wave sleep. The best sleepers are the 10-year-old kids. In other words, if I have a 10-year-old kid sleeping right there, and if I play the loudest music that I can possibly play it, that kid will just remain sleeping because they are just excellent sleepers. They will go into this deep sleep. Now, so 1, 2, 3, 4. 1 and 2 are the light stages of sleep. 3 and 4 are the deep stages of sleep. The 3 and 4 are what we call the restorative stages of sleep. In other words, if you want to restore, if you want to be rejuvenated and wake up refreshed the next day, you want to go through 3 and 4, okay? They are what we call restorative stages of sleep. And then the fifth stage, which is what we call REM stage, that's when we dream. Whether you like it or not, whether you believe me or not, whether you remember it or not, you're going to dream every 90 to 120 minutes. So every hour and a half to 2 hours, you're dreaming. And the dream that you remember most is the dream that you're dreaming right before you wake up in the morning. Delta wave sleep, stages 3 and 4, are most robust before midnight. Let me say that again. 3 and 4 are most robust before midnight, 2 hours before midnight. REM is most robust after midnight. In fact, the most robust REM is seen like 4 or 5 in the morning, okay? So most heart attacks will occur between 6 a.m. and 12 noon. Most strokes will occur between 12 midnight and 6 a.m. Why? Because if you have a pre-existing heart problem, for example, if you have a pre-existing blockage in your artery, and then you go into REM, where REM is, you know, REM is that stage in your sleep where everything gets exaggerated. Your heart rate goes up, your breathing becomes irregular, your temperature goes up, more blood flow to your brain. Delta wave, on the other hand, is totally the opposite. It's when your heart rate is lowest, it's when your metabolism is lowest, and however, in delta wave sleep, that's when cell division is highest. So if you want your kids to grow, tell them to go to bed before midnight, because that's when cell division is at its peak. You understand? Okay, REM also, you know, it's incredible. The body will allow you to prune a lot of your nerve cells in your body. In our brain, there are trillions of nerve cells, okay? And they connect with each other through what we call a synapse. And they have dendritic spines, okay? So that's how they connect. The body prunes during REM some of these dendritic spines and also strengthens some of them, therefore enhancing newly learned information. So that's when protein synthesis occurs, during REM. So if you want your kid to learn his math, you better make sure you give him a good night's sleep so that they go into both deep stages and REM. So it's amazing how we're now just beginning to know all these things. This REM was discovered just 50 years ago by two doctors at the University of Chicago, Asarinsky and Kleitman, where they discovered their patients while they were studying in the lab, their eyes started flickering. And their patients told them, look, we were dreaming during that time. So it was called rapid eye movement. That's why these scientists called it REM. So what are the benefits of sleep? Well, we already talked about that, but there was one amazing healthcare worker about 100 years ago, and she wrote something like this. I know from the testimonies given me from time to time for brain workers that sleep is worth far more before midnight. 2 hours of good sleep before 12 o'clock is worth more than 4 hours after 12. Boy, she had a lot of deep understanding of how sleep works. This was over 100 years ago. Amazing. So my recommendation to young people is, or to everybody, if you want to get a good night's sleep, you better go to sleep before midnight. 2 hours, preferably before midnight. So just to give you a little basis of how our core body relates to sleep, as our body temperature goes down, our propensity to fall asleep also goes up. And also, the levels of melatonin will also go up as our body temperature goes down. At around 6 o'clock, that's when our body temperature starts going down. And also, our melatonin starts going up. Our lowest body temperature occurs 2 to 3 hours before our habitual wake time. In other words, if we wake up around 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock in the morning, our lowest body temperature will be around 4 o'clock. Why is that? Well, why is that important? Well, it's like now, right? You just ate a big meal. A lot of people will probably tell you, oh, you're going to fall asleep because you just ate a big meal. It's really a myth, because you are sleepy between the hours of 2 p.m. and 6 p.m. in the afternoon, and also most sleepy at 2 a.m. between 2 a.m. and 6 a.m. in the morning. Because why? Because your body drops. The body temperature takes a little dip early afternoon. That's why most people are kind of groggy. Even if they don't eat a big meal, even if they don't eat a meal, they will have that propensity to fall asleep anyway. Now, just a little word on melatonin. You know, a lot of people say, well, you got to take it half an hour before you go to bed. That's not good information, because as you see right there where that arrow, that little arrow, not that big arrow going across, but that little arrow, that's when your melatonin starts going up. So that's when you should take your melatonin pill if you want to help yourself to fall asleep. Not half an hour, because you want to augment that rise of melatonin. And so by the time people take their melatonin half an hour before they go to bed, let's say they go to bed at 10 o'clock, they take it at 9:30, their melatonin levels are already way up. So what you want to do is you take it 2 to 3 hours before you go to bed. So if you go to bed at 10, take it around 7, 6:30. Now, just a little word on 24-hour sleep cycle. If I put you in a cave with no iPhones, with no computers, with no lights, with no sunshine, our body, our internal clock our internal clock is really, it runs on a 24-hour and 15-minute cycle. So as we don't have the external cues that we usually have, because we really wake up in the morning when the sun hits the hypothalamus and the anterior hypothalamus of our brain, and then the brain will respond by secreting all these wake hormones. We wake up because of the sunshine hitting the brain. Not coffee, by the way, like most people think. But if you don't have all the external cues, if you don't have a watch, if you don't have an iPhone, you don't have an iPad or whatever, you don't have any external cues of what time it is, your body will just, you will just go to bed later and wake up later. And that's why you see this drift. But that's just good information. So what are the sleep robbers? 40 million Americans at any given time have insomnia. 87% of most American, 87% of Americans have at one time in their life suffered from insomnia. So it's a big problem here in the U.S. Inadequate sleep hygiene, caffeine, nicotine, alcohol. Did you know that caffeine, 1 8-ounce cup of coffee, has a 16-hour effect? So if you drink it at 8 o'clock in the morning, it'll last till 12 midnight. You know, and I have a lot of patients that tell me, Doc, I can't sleep. Well, what are you drinking? Well, I only drink 2 cups of coffee in the morning, and I drink a Coke for lunch and then a tea at, you know, a glass of tea at 4 o'clock. You're drinking caffeine all day long. 1 8-ounce cup of anything caffeinated will have a 16-hour effect. So caffeine is not good for you. Alcohol, you know, a lot of people say, well, I have to have my nightcap. It helps them fall asleep. But then 3 to 4 hours later, alcohol is metabolized, and the metabolite of alcohol will fragment the last 4 or 5 hours of your sleep. So in essence, it reduces the major sleep period. So alcohol is not good for you. What about sleep disordered breathing? Well, the most common that I see in my clinical practice is, going back, sleep apnea. That's when you have an obstruction in the upper airway, and you try to breathe through this obstruction by moving your chest wall and abdominal wall, and when you finally generate enough pressure to overcome the obstruction, you let out a big snore. You go, and you wake yourself up, and you fragment your sleep, and you basically stay in stages 1 and 2. You never seem to go in stages 3 and 4, which is what you really need to restore yourself. Narcolepsy is a disease where you have this sudden urge to fall asleep associated with what we call cataplexy. It's a disease where you just lose all control. You just fall because you just don't have muscle strength. And then you have periodic leg movements and restless leg syndromes, which are big fragmenters of sleep as well. I just want to show you a little clip of what sleep apnea. If I have to to bet my last penny, I would bet that 50% of us in this room have at least some degree of sleep apnea. Here, let me just show it to you. Oops. That's not working, is it? So he stops breathing, but he moves his chest wall and abdominal wall. That's okay. So he's not breathing, moving his chest wall, abdominal wall, and eventually he generates enough pressure to overcome the obstruction, and he lets out a big snort. Come on now. You hear it? Anyway, you get the idea. So, if I were to bet my last penny, at least one half to two thirds of us will have sleep apnea, some degree of sleep apnea. So, sleep deprivation is a big thing, and the effect of sleep deprivation is similar to drinking alcohol. Studies show that if you go without sleep for 18 hours straight, you suffer from a level of impairment that is equal to having a blood alcohol content of 0.05%. If you have not slept for 24 hours, it's equivalent to about one tenth percent of blood alcohol content. So that you are 7 times more likely to have an accident if you haven't had enough sleep. The other sleep robbers, chronic medical problems, diabetes, heart disease, arthritis. Parasomnia is when people sleepwalk, sleep talk. They have night terrors. And then shift workers, I don't care what they do, but they are probably one of the most sleep-deprived group of people in the workforce today. Even though they get used to their shift hours, they still are sleep deprived. Stress and fatigue can also rob you of needful sleep. And fatigue impairs judgment and reaction time, like alcohol. In fact, there was a study a few years ago. Fatigue was the primary cause of 41% of heavy truck crashes in the western part of the United States. And in Oklahoma and California, 50% of fatal accidents on freeways are from falling asleep. Now, insomnia is big in our country, in our society. And young people, I call them, I call it electronic insomniacs. Electronic insomniacs, because they have phones, they have computers, they watch TV all night, and stress induces the adrenal gland to secrete cortisol, which is what we call a stress hormone. Stress and excess cortisol can be minimized by proper rest, exercising, and relaxation. You know what I always tell patients, if they tell me, especially young people, they always ask me, "Doc, I can't sleep." You know, people in their 40s or 50s that don't work, they're disabled, and I always tell them, there's a verse in the Bible, Ecclesiastes 5:12, the sleep of a laboring man is sweet. This is an antidote to insomnia. Whether he eats a little or much, but the abundance of the rich will not permit him to sleep. So you don't want to be burnt out. You want to sleep like a baby. So what are the ideas for a restful sleep? You got to have a downtime, and I always tell patients, you cannot expect to fall asleep if you've been, you know, watching TV, an exciting, you know, action-packed movie or been reading an exciting book or something. You got to have a downtime, at least 2 to 3 hours before you go to bed. No meals, this is big, no meals 5 to 6 hours before you go to bed. You'll read in the internet that it's good to have a little snack, a little cookie with a glass of warm milk. But what happens when you eat? When you eat, your insulin goes up. Insulin inhibits melatonin. So I always tell patients, you got to go to bed with an empty stomach at least 5 to 6 hours from the time that you took your last bite. When you go to bed with an empty stomach, it seems as if you will go to bed sleeping an extra hour. And so the quality of your sleep is so much better when you go to bed with an empty stomach. Worry time. A lot of people can't stop worrying. So what it works for some people, but let me tell you what I tell patients. Look, if you're going to worry, set up a time between, let's say, 6 and 7 in the evening. Worry all you want. Worry about your kids. Worry about your spouse. Worry about your job. Worry about everything else. At 7 o'clock, you're done. Don't think about it anymore. Seriously, it works. Because if you let everything, all the stresses, all your relatives, you worry about them, and you keep worrying about them all day long, you're not going to be able to function. So set a worry time, and once you get there, once it's 7 o'clock, you're done. Don't think about anybody else. Caffeine, alcohol, nicotine, also theobromine, which is in chocolate, okay? You cannot have those because they will wake you up or they will keep you up. No clocks. I had a patient recently, just last week. He says, "Doc, I can't believe it works." Because she told me, like, I don't know, months ago, she says, I've got this clock in front of me. I said, get it out of there. You don't need a clock. And so she comes back to the clinic. I said, "How are you doing?" "I cannot believe it. I don't care about what time it is. I just go to sleep, fall asleep." And because, like, the more you look at your clock, the more you worry about not getting enough sleep, and the more you try to fall asleep, and the more you try to fall asleep, the more you cannot sleep. So you better not have a clock in front of you. Regularity is the key. If you want to have a good, helpful sleep, restorative sleep, you got to go to bed the same time and wake up the same time. You can't go to bed tonight at 9 o'clock and then tomorrow 7:30, the next day 11:30, the following day 5 o'clock. You can't. You can't be all over the clock. You got to go to bed within 5 to 10 minutes of the same time. If you go to bed at 9 o'clock tonight, tomorrow you can go to bed at 8:55, the next day 9:05. Do you understand what I'm saying? You get my point, right? Regularity is the key. Same thing when you get up. Even on weekends, you don't reward yourself, "Okay, it's Saturday morning, I'm going to lay around and languish in my bed for another 30 minutes to an hour." You can't do that. Regularity is the key. Just the same way you eat the same time every day for lunch, for supper, or for breakfast, the same thing for going to bed. Regularity is the key. Bed is only for sleeping. Nothing else. It's for intimate association with your spouse and for sleeping only. That's it. Those two things. Don't use it for computer work. Don't use it for games. Don't use it for anything else. Because ultimately, if you can't fall asleep, you're going to associate your bed with not being able to fall asleep because you're reading a book, an exciting book, or you're doing some computer game or something like that, and you're in bed and you're getting all riled up and you can't fall asleep. The association is being made. And so you need to not do anything in bed except those two things. It's got to be dark and cool. And again, no stimulating activity. And I said no clocks already. So what is the optimal sleep duration? The American Cancer Society came up a few years ago with the number 7. They said, if you sleep 7 hours a night, the risk of developing cancer is minimized. You know, in golf, the golf club has a sweet spot. When you hit the ball, when you hit it right where it needs to be hit, it's called the sweet spot, the ball will go straight and far. The same thing in sleep. The sweet spot is 7 hours. Some people can't function if they haven't had 8 or 9 hours. That's fine. But usually, the best, according to the American Cancer Society, they said the sweet spot or the perfect number of hours of sleep is 7 hours. But the National Sleep Foundation came up with these recommendations just a couple of years ago. For newborns, 14 to 17 hours. Babies, 12 to 15. Children, 11 to 14 hours. Preschool, 10 to 13. School age, 9 to 11. Teens, Adam, you got to get your 10 hours of sleep, buddy. Youth, 7 to 9. Adults, 7 to 9. Seniors, over 65, 7 to 8 hours. I'm going to switch now my talk to what sleep does for us. If you have a good night's sleep, you can be successful in a lot of things. And the first thing I'm going to talk about is sleep and academic performance. So here's a study out of University of North Texas and Brown University where they took 867 students. The mean age was about 20 years old. Those kids that went to bed later and woke up later and they languished in bed even though they're awake already and they took naps in the afternoon had a lower grade point average. GPA or grade point average and total sleep time have a curvilinear relationship. What does that mean? I'll show you. So if you look at this graph, this is GPA, right? If they slept anywhere between 7 to 8 hours, their GPA was pretty high. But if they go below that or above that, their GPA also goes down. So a good number of hours of sleep is between 7 and 8 hours. So here's another study out of Argentina and France in 2013. They took 1,000 kids, mean age of 15 years. Poor academic performance was due to somnolence, which was inversely proportional to sleep duration. Somnolence is sleepiness, okay? So, generally speaking, if you don't sleep enough, your daytime functioning is messed up. You're sleepy, okay? And your attention span is low, and therefore your academic performance is not very good. So, you have to have a good night's sleep. Now, here's a study out of UCLA. They took over 500 kids, ninth graders, mean age of 15 years. The question then is, okay, should I study more to get my grades up, or should I just go to sleep when it's time to go to sleep? The results were, regardless of how much a student studies, if the student sacrifices sleep time to study more than usual, he will have trouble understanding material taught in class or likely to struggle on the test the following day. So Ben, you better get your good night's sleep, buddy. Don't try to study even more than you need to. Study when you have to, study when you need to, but don't study anymore. You gotta get your good night's sleep. Remember that REM solidifies your learning, learning new information. There's protein synthesis. So here's another study. Even small decreases in total sleep time. In other words, the C, D, and F students, when they got their grades, they were found to be sleeping 25 to 30 minutes less than the average. Even just less than an hour, you know, of less sleeping, they were getting C's and D's and F's. So they have the C and D F students had greater inattention, they had poor decision making and decreased memory. So sleep helps children and youth think well. Sufficient sleep for children aids proper brain development and good memory, strengthens the immune system and contributes to good social behavior. So tuck them to bed early. Sleep is critical to scholastic success. Together with binge drinking and marijuana use, researchers found that sleep problems predicted lower grade point averages. Sleep issues were the strongest predictor for a student dropping out of a course. Teens with the shortest duration of sleep found the highest level of blood sugar, an indicator of insulin resistance and diabetes risk. These students' average sleep duration was only 6.4. In the United Kingdom, 10,000 children who were studied with irregular bedtimes had more behavioral problems than those with regular bedtimes, and they trained these kids. They helped them get a good night's sleep, and they helped them to be more regular, and it significantly improved their behavior. You know what? Not everybody's affected by not getting enough sleep. It's amazing. Here's a study out of Saudi Arabia where they looked at 161 medical students. It didn't matter whether they had 4 hours of sleep or 8 hours of sleep. It didn't affect their GPA scores. You know why? Because medical students and medical healthcare providers are so used to being sleep deprived. So excessive daytime somnolence or sleepiness is common among medical students. So it didn't really affect medical students that much because they're so used to it. Okay, what about sleep and athletic performance? Ben, you like sports? Oh yeah, that's what I thought. Sleep can be the difference between success and failure. So here's a study out of, where was this from? I think it was from either France or Argentina. When they looked at athletes' pre-competitive sleep behavior, right the night before they went on competition, they had a heightened anxiety level, you know, because they were getting ready for the competition. So almost 70% of them experienced poorer sleep than usual, which relates to poorer mood states, which is the key element in peak performance. In other words, if you're in a bad mood, just because you didn't get a good night's sleep, you're not going to perform well. So factors included anxiety, noise, you know, bathroom use, because if you're nervous night before a competition, you might use the bathroom more often. Here's a study where they looked at Major League Baseball teams. They examined the data of 20-year data of Major League Baseball teams, and if they traveled to the East and played a certain team in the East, they were 3.5% less likely to win their games when they traveled eastward. But if they went west, it didn't make any difference. So east is least, west is best. Because when you go to the east, you lose a couple of hours of sleep, right? Like if you're from Kansas, for example, if you want to go to New York, they're 1 hour ahead, so you lose 1 hour of sleep. So here's another study where they looked at sleep deprivation. And what they said was sleep deprivation on athletic performance is profound. Impairment of motor function resulting in substandard sports performance. There was also impairment of visual reaction. Now, here's a study of Olympians, you know, Olympic athletes. They're very they're high-powered athletes, so they want to make sure that their preparation for their games is optimized, including nutrition, hydration, and rest. And they found that taking a 30-minute nap, like a power nap, improved their performance, especially in sprinting. What about health? Well, we've touched on this a little bit earlier. So here are the adverse effects of lack of sleep. Heart disease, congestive heart failure. 50% of congestive heart failure is associated with sleep apnea. cardiac arrhythmias, you know, heart irregularity is associated with chronic sleep deficiency. Hypertension, if people have had three or four drugs to control their blood pressure and their blood pressure is still not controlled, you better start thinking of sleep disorder, like sleep apnea. Obesity, there's such a thing as ghrelin and leptin. I'll show you the slide in a minute, but it allows you, it makes you more hungry if you don't get enough sleep. The propensity is to eat more calorie-dense foods, like French fries and, you know, high-fat foods like that. It worsens your diabetes. And there was a study a few years ago where they looked at, barring any other confounding variables, the biggest predisposer to a stroke is sleep apnea. So if you know of somebody who have had a stroke, you better make sure they get a sleep study and rule out sleep disordered breathing like sleep apnea. And cancer. Cancer is a big thing. And cognitive dysfunction. Who among you can function well mentally if you haven't had a good night's sleep? I mean, you'll try, but I think you're more sharp when you've had ample sleep. So here's a study of 70,000 women, and they found that those who slept about 5 hours a night had a 40% higher rate of having a heart attack than those people that slept 8 hours. And in 2009, the Agency for Research on Cancer concluded that night working is just one category below known carcinogens such as asbestos as a cause of cancer, especially breast and prostate cancer. Researchers find that the lack of sleep contributes to obesity. When you don't sleep, ghrelin tells you you're hungry, and leptin will tell you, these are enzymes or chemicals in your body that will tell, leptin will tell you you don't need to eat, ghrelin will tell you you need to eat. When you don't get enough sleep, your ghrelin level will go up. So it'll tell you you need to eat. And that causes obesity. So they also took a study. They did a study on six young men, good looking, no medical problems, and they sleep deprived them. In other words, they didn't let them sleep for six nights in a row. So after six nights, they had bags under their eyes, they had wrinkles on their faces, but then the following week, they let them sleep for as long as they wanted. Like most of them slept 12 hours a day, and they've totally recovered. What happens is that when you get a good night's sleep, our skin is a little brighter because oxygen and nutrients have stimulated the production of collagen and elastin, making the appearance of our skin better, not wrinkled and not old looking. So here's my last slide. When you get a good night's sleep, these positive, just a little explanation here. You know, in our, we have a lot of genes, right? And sleeping less and sleeping more won't change our genes, but it will basically kind of turn on the positive genes and turn off the negative genes if you get a good night's sleep, and vice versa. If you don't get a good night's sleep, it'll turn on the negative genes and turn off the positive genes. So here's a study on mice. The Allen Institute of Brain Science, in collaboration with SRI International, reported some 224 genes in mice show a negatively changed gene expression due to sleep deprivation, and that thousands of genes appear to be regulated by a 24-hour circadian rhythm, which means that if you get a good night's sleep, your positive genes will get turned off, and your negative genes will get turned off. But ultimately, here's a good promise in the Bible. Ultimately, if you have a good relationship with Jesus Christ, the promise is he will make you dwell in safety. In Psalm 4:8, I will both lie in peace, lie down in peace and sleep. For you alone, O Lord, make me dwell in safety. So with that, I'm going to open it up to questions. Yes, ma'am. I know, that's the problem. Yeah, that's the problem. So what I always tell patients, and Dr. Bryant might have a different opinion, but what I always tell patients is they have you eating snacks so that when you take your insulin, your blood sugars won't go down. Okay. Mm-hmm. So what happens when you snack is really not good for you. Why don't you just not snack and not take as much blood sugar medications? It's a little bit of a balancing act. So what I always tell patients is, if you're on, what are you on? Metformin. If you're on 1,000, cut it back to, let's say, 500, and see what happens. And don't snack. Because what's happening is, in the last 50 years, we have not seen a dent by the American Diabetic Association in causing the rate of diabetes development in this country to go down. We have more diabetics now than ever. There's got to be something wrong. I mean, I don't know what the ADA is doing, but we keep getting bigger and bigger, and we keep diagnosing more and more diabetes patients. So I think we're doing something wrong. Any other questions? Paula. Yeah, you know, that I think that's a difficult situation, because like I said, shift workers are probably one of the most sleep deprived group of individuals. No matter how much you have acclimatized to your shift work schedule, you're still sleep deprived, because God really made us to be awake during the day and to be asleep at night. And so if we try to fight that, you know, we kind of mess up our circadian rhythm, so to speak. So what do you do? Well, you just try to sleep as much as you can during the day. Correct. Yes, it will. Yeah, like if you go across the Pacific Ocean, and you know they're 12 hours ahead, what do you do at that point? Well, you still take it 2 to 3 hours of your desired bedtime, and your desired bedtime is you want to acclimatize to that time schedule where you're at. You don't want to keep sleeping. Okay, well it's daytime here, but it's nighttime for me. I'm going to go to sleep. No, it's not going to work. So you want to try to get your melatonin. Let's say you land in Manila and it's, you know, it's daytime and it's nighttime for you. What I always do is try to keep active to keep yourself awake. And then when it's time to go to bed at 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock in the evening, take the melatonin around 6:30, 7 o'clock, 2 to 3 hours before you go to bed. Yes, ma'am.
Is it mouth to the end?
Well, you know, I always have patients, not always, but I see a lot of patients that tell me, oh yeah, my mother is diabetic, my grandfather was diabetic, but like you said, the reason why he or she is diabetic is because they're following the same lifestyle, same footsteps, nutritionally, lifestyle-wise, everything else. So they will end up in the same category. So what I always tell them is, look, it doesn't have to be this way. You can change your lifestyle and not end up where your mother, you know, she was amputated because she was diabetic. It doesn't have to be that way. You can change your diet. That's why we're here today, because we're learning ways and means of improving our health, right? So that's what I always tell patients. It doesn't have to be that way. Just because your dad was big and your grandfather was big, doesn't have to be, you don't have to be big. You don't have to weigh 200 something pounds. You know, you can change your diet, you can exercise, and you can improve your health. Yes, ma'am. Absolutely. That, you know, my wife and I, where's my wife? We eat 2 meals a day. Yes. Breakfast should be substantial. Okay. Yes. The question was, does sugar age you? Is it true that sugar ages you? I can't think of it right now, but I believe sugar is a big it's a big thing when it comes to formation of cancers. Yeah. So think about this. If it produces cancer, if it makes you develop all these cancerous tumors. Absolutely. I tell patients, don't drink cola drinks because it's not good for you. I've been preaching this for the last 20 years. Baylor University from Texas, they just came up with a study recently. They said cola drinks make you look and feel older. So thank you very much. I'm sorry? Absolutely. Number one in Oklahoma is Dr. Pepper. I always tell them, Dr. Pepper is not good for you. Yes, ma'am. You got. Okay, so for let's say you got to go to the bathroom, right? Well, then you correct the main problem. If it's for males, you know, you correct the prostate problem. For females, you know, whatever it is, you need to correct it. I'm sorry? If you're thirsty?
Yeah, I'm getting dirty out right
now. Okay, so what I always tell patients is, okay, drink everything, drink ample enough water, but probably slow down by around 6 o'clock. So you won't be going to the bathroom all night long. Drink all, you know, because a lot of people don't remember drinking during the day. And so I tell them by 6 o'clock, you need to slow down so that you won't be going to the bathroom every hour on the hour, you know, at night. You had your hand up. The sweeteners? Oh, man. That's a whole nother talk. So the question is, what about sweeteners? Artificial, right? Are you talking about artificial sweeteners? Here's what I always tell patients. I see a lot of conflicting studies on sugars, but I always tell them, whether it's artificial or real, too much of one thing is good for nothing. So I tell them, you know, artificial is probably not good. They're synthetic, they're man-made, they're artificial. So they're not better for you. That's what I always tell them. But you got to minimize it. Again, you know, too much of one thing is good for nothing. That's why the idea of most people when they drink diet drinks is that they can drink however much, whenever they want it. It's not good. So I always tell them, it's not good for you. These diet drinks are just because they're diet drinks. You know, if you look at the obesity epidemic, the obesity epidemic really started back in the 80s, late 70s, 80s. The diet industry started back in the late 70s, and also in the 80s. So they parallel each other. So they go hand in hand. People that think, oh, it's diet, I can drink 6 to 8 cans of Diet Dr. Pepper, they're the ones that will get bigger and have all these fatty deposits in their liver. You had your hand up, Josh. No, you didn't. Okay. Okay, just a little bit on blue light. Blue light, as you all know, is the biggest inhibitor of melatonin. So as much as possible, if you are sensitive to blue light, there are goggles that block the blue light from coming into your eyes. So my wife and my son, they wear goggles by 6 o'clock in the evening because they don't want the blue light to inhibit the rise of melatonin. Yes, ma'am. Blue light is one of those wavelengths of white light. If you break down white light, there's blue light. You know, you see that in computers, like LED lights and everything. So blue light is a waveform, and it's the biggest inhibitor of melatonin. So, yes, an iPad, your iPhone, your computer. Yes. What's that?
Like the clock.
Yeah, yeah, they have LED lights. Yeah. Yes, ma'am. You know, no, never heard of it. You know, again, regularity is the key. And I always make sure that don't exercise 3 to 4 hours before you go to bed. Set a worry time, set a down time. No meals 5 to 6 hours before bedtime. No clocks. The room has to be dark and cool and, you know, conducive for sleeping. And those are the real, and regularity is the key. Those are the real, yeah. Then probably there's something else that we probably need to talk about. Yes. Start thinking about things. Yeah. So what we always tell patients is if you can't fall back to sleep within 15 to 20 minutes, get up and read something that's not stimulating. Okay? Yes. We deal with a lot of insomniacs, and we always tell them, look, if you've been laying there awake, you better get up after 15 to 20 minutes. And don't go to bed unless you're absolutely dead tired and sleepy. Because what's going to happen is you're going to develop what we call psychophysiologic insomnia. What is that? You develop this anxiety-provoking attitude towards going to bed. A lot of people will have this attitude, oh, here we go again. They're brushing their teeth. Here we go. I won't be able to fall asleep. It's anxiety provoking. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. So what we tell them is go to bed only if you're dead tired and you're, you know, ready to fall asleep. Don't stay in bed just 3 o'clock. Oh, it's 4 o'clock, you know. Don't do that. Do something. Read something not stimulating. Don't play games. Just, you can pray. That's what I always tell patients. You know, pray. Yeah.
For people that have to wake up at certain times in the morning, is there
Whatever wakes you up. Yeah, whatever wakes you up. You know, I don't know. I think whatever wakes you up, when it's time for you to get up, you better get up. You know, whether it's harsh or loud or sedating music. Depending on your situation, if you have, what's that? Well, no, I think. When it's time for you to get up, it's time for you to get up. Yeah. You know, I am so gifted when it comes to sleeping. I can sleep anytime, anywhere, any position. When we go international, even before the plane takes off, I'm already like, you know. And by the time we get across the Pacific Ocean, by the time I get there, I'm ready to go. My wife and my son, they're like zombies. So I think it doesn't matter. Whatever you need to do to get your sleep, that's what you need to do. Whether it's a different type of alarm, whether it's a sedating or boom, boom, boom type of alarm, that's what you need to do. Yes, ma'am.
I always try to read 30, 45 minutes before I go to sleep.
Yeah.
So why?
That's what I do too. It makes me fall asleep. If it's a problem for you, if it's a problem for you not being able to sleep, don't do it. But if it's when I read, I'm like, okay, I'm out. Yeah, if you're gonna read something that's not. Don't read about, you know, David and Goliath. Oh, you know what I mean? Yes, something that's calm and not make you excited. But, you know, sleep is not just a biologic necessity. It's also essential for optimal health. That's why, that's my main point today. That's my take-home message, because I think we all need a good night's sleep. If you want to age better, you got to get a good night's sleep. Okay, a couple more questions. I think we need to wrap up, right? Okay, yes, sir. Oh, that's an excellent question. Body heals better when you get a good night's sleep. It's amazing, because what happens is the immune system gets boosted. These lymphocytes, B lymphocytes, and the natural killer cells, they get stimulated, and they collagen and elastin get formed, and there's cell division when you get a good night's sleep. Growth hormone is secreted. Cell division is because when you have surgery, you're cut open, right? So you need healing in that area of your body. So cell division needs to occur right then and there. So you need a good night's sleep. Healing is accentuated when you get a good night's sleep. You know, a lot of patients when they go to the hospital and they're so sick, and we put them on a ventilator and we let them sleep for 2 to 3 days, they wake up. It's like, wow, I feel good, you know, because they haven't had enough sleep prior to that. And it heals their body, and it helps them recover much, much quicker.
I've heard about people saying, oh, we need power.
Yes.
How does that affect
them? Well, do you remember that slide on athletes? They took a 30-minute power nap, kind of like that, and it helped improve their sprint performance. They were able to run faster. To me, if I'm going to take a nap, I'm going to take at least an hour to 2 hours. 30 minutes is not enough for me. But if you don't have enough time, I think 20 to 30 minutes will help you.
Is that going to have a negative effect on your night's sleep?
It depends. See, the Mexicans, our brothers and sisters below, you know, south of the border, have got it right. Studies have shown that when these people have lower incidence of high blood pressure, lower incidence of heart disease, because they take a nap between 12 and 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and they re-energize themselves, and they're good to go the rest of the day. You know, I used to do that when I was in medical school. After lunch, I would take a nap, and I would be re-energized, you know, to go back to class, and it didn't affect my major sleep period. If it does to you, then don't do it. A lot of patients, they take a nap, and they can't fall asleep until 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning. That's not good. That has a negative effect. So it depends on the individual. If it doesn't... Yeah. Not good for you. Yeah, I used to do that in medical school. I didn't know any better. But taking naps after a meal is not good for you. After a meal, you should take a walk, okay? And I would wait probably an hour before I would take a nap after a meal. Make sure my food is digested, make sure that everything is fine, but even probably longer. But I would not take a nap right away. But again, you're sleepy around that time because your body temperature dips, right? And it makes you sleepy. Whether you ate a big meal or not, you're going to be more sleepy. So.
All right. Okay, let's give Dr. Sabangan a hand. And thank you very much. Thank you. And you're all going to sleep tonight at 9? Okay. All right.